Emmy Award-winning public radio and TV journalist and producer Maria Hinojosa is the next speaker in Eastern Kentucky University's Chautauqua Lecture Series. Her Thursday evening talk will address the topic, a Latina perspective on the politics of 2016.
Being the first Latina hired at NPR, being the first Latina hired at CNN, that people do see me as having a particular role. And so I see that role in basically trying to give voice to voiceless and trying to, bring this kind of unique perspective that I have.
On this week's Eastern Standard, Maria Hinojosa discusses her groundbreaking journalistic career, her talk on the EKU campus, and related matters. This is a recorded edition of our show, so we're not able to take any listener calls, tweets, or emails this week. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I am John Hingsbergen. And this week on our program, a very special show, journalist and producer Maria Hinojosa will be a speaker for this year's Eastern Kentucky University Chautauqua Lecture Series. Hinojosa will provide a Latina perspective on the politics of 2016 when she speaks as the annual keynote speaker for Eastern Kentucky University's Hispanic Heritage Month. And that talk is this evening on Thursday, September the 22nd. And Maria Hinojosa joins us prior to the program by telephone from her office in New York City. Am I correct? You are in New York, Maria?
You're very correct, John. In fact, to be very specific, we're on 125th Street, which is the heart of Harlem, which is part of Upper Manhattan in New York City. And that's where Futuro Media Group is based. It's where Latino USA is produced, where we produce our public television series, our podcast In the Thick, which is politics and journalists, and our digital miniseries called Humanizing America. All of that comes from our offices right here on 125th Street. Wow. In the heart of Harlem. And so, as I always say, and I love to say it, if you're in Harlem and you want to come say hello, stop by.
So many things are the outgrowth of the original production that you began, am I correct, 25 years ago, Latino USA?
The show will be turning 25 next year. I, at that point, was a correspondent at NPR, and I was asked by the founding executive producer, Maria Emilia Martin, who is now a journalist living and working in Guatemala. She was the founding executive producer. I was a new correspondent at NPR. I was doing a lot of reporting on communities that people weren't reporting about, and one of those communities was I'm a Latina, I'm Mexican born, raised in Chicago. And so Maria Martin asked me to anchor the show. At that point, that's what I was doing. I was literally, as you would say, in the television world, talent. I was a journalist and a reporter for NPR out of the New York Bureau. But basically, the show was based in Austin, Texas, and I was consultant on everything, but I was basically, the anchor of the show. I wasn't producing the show. I wasn't raising the money for the show. And then 6 years ago, Futuro Media Group, 6.5 years ago, I formed a nonprofit independent media company called the Futuro Media Group. And we took over the production of Latino USA. KUT in Austin, Texas, basically said, we love you and we want you to have it. And we said, we want it. We love you too and we want to have it. And since then, the show has grown to an hour-long weekly show. And it's absolute journalism, but there's a lot of storytelling. And I don't even want to call it storytelling because I think Latino USA is frankly creating its own very unique sound. And that's why I think, people love the show. It has nothing to do with whether or not you're Latino. This is what I love, and I think it's important for us to know, right, that the majority of our audience for Latino USA on the radio is actually white America. Mm-hmm. And they love our show because our show really talks about Latino issues from a very authentic, lived place. The reporting that we do is very authentic and lived. And I think that people who look at numbers and understand demographics and look at their own communities and see Latinos and Latinas, you know, becoming their friends, their coworkers, friends of their kids, of their grandkids, and they're saying, we want to know more. We're interested. We want to know more. We're actually actively rejecting the kind of narrative that, let's say, for example, is exemplified by a now, you know, kind of not so very visible Lou Dobbs or Donald Trump, you know, a kind of anti-immigrant in general, anti-undocumented immigrant, anti-Latino, anti-Mexican. Our show is none of those things. Our show can't be anti-immigrant, anti-undocumented immigrant, anti-Latino, anti-Mexican. We're Latino USA. But it doesn't mean that we don't do critical journalism about Latinos, Latinas, our lived lives, you know, leaders who let us down, culture, how we're contributing. And we do all of that from a very unique perspective. And yes, my dear John, that was a long answer to say it's all produced right here out of 125th Street.
When the program began, I assume it was seen as an experiment. Was it the very first production of its type that addressed Latino issues in a very direct fashion? Were there other programs directed to a general audience, specifically on public radio?
On a national scale and distributed by NPR, Latino USA was a first in the sense that it was a longer show. There is a long history, John, about Latinos and public media and our relationship to public media. And it is, I guess I'll take this moment to talk about it. I mean, basically, it's been long and complicated. Latino USA actually was the result of many attempts at trying to satisfy an invisibility problem that public radio has and had with Latinos. The CPB was involved. It was a real conversation because, again, if you look at demographics, the number, the real target audience that any consumer products want right now and any media company wants right now are Latino and Latina millennials, because that's one of the fastest growing demographic groups that, again, is very brand loyal. So, all of those numbers were there, but it was unclear whether or not public media, public radio was really hearkening to this question of invisibility of Latino voices on NPR specifically, on the news programs. So there was the Latin American News Service, and then Latino USA was created. And I think, to be honest with you, the sense was, oh, well, this is kind of nice, but we don't think it's going to last very long. And what's happened because of the fact that Futuro Media Group took over the production 6 years ago, and then I was like, we can't let this show die. We have to grow this show because this is where the future audience is for public media, is in this kind of diversity of audience. And so we grew the show. Frankly, it became a much more entertaining, interesting, curiosity-provoking, honest, authentic, phenomenal investigative journalism, great interviews. It became that kind of a show. And so our numbers, John, are kind of phenomenal. In the last year, and I can't give you the exact period because we haven't gotten most recent numbers, but our radio audience, the one that's listening to us now on the radio across the country, grew by 39%. 39% for a radio show that's been around for almost 25 years.
At a time when radio listening is in general on the decline.
Exactly. So what I love, John, and what I love about coming to places like where I'm going to be speaking there in Eastern Kentucky for this Chautauqua Lecture, what a beautiful combination for me, is that I get a chance to kind of bring that the soul and heart of Latino USA and then a very personal take on the world, which is me, and my lived experience as a Latina journalist who is kind of on the front lines in a strange way. You know, I mean, you could say, well, you know, you've been in this for 25 years. Maybe you want to go and kind of write a book and think about something else. And it's like, you know, now more than ever, Latinos, immigrants, Mexicans, of which I am one, we are the center story of our country. So Latino USA and the stories that we have to tell and the people we have to speak to and the narratives we have to correct and the injustices that need to be, you know, to be clarified in terms of a media invisibility, that's only going to intensify, which is great because we have a great team of really diverse producers. Not all of them are millennials. I'm sorry, not all of them are Latinos. I think most of them would consider themselves millennials. But we're a very, very diverse team, and I think that that also helps our audience in the sense that we're not just internally Latinos looking at our navel gazing, but at the same time, if you are Latino, you can kind of get where we're like really helping you as a Latino or Latina connect with a part of yourself that maybe you have, you know, not been so sure of. It's the funny thing about it, John, is that, you know, everybody, we don't really get into a national conversation like the politics of today, but there are many Latinos and Latinas walking around saying, I'm not Latino enough. I'm not Latina enough. I don't fit into that box. And what we're saying is, yeah, sure you do. Why not? There is no grand poobah of who gets to decide who is a Latino and who is not. But if your lineage takes you there, pues órale, is what we say. At the same time, my senior producer is Marlon Bishop, who is a Jewish guy from Queens, who speaks Spanish and Portuguese and is a part and parcel of our community. And he has so much respect for the Latino community. But we bring that to the stories we tell in Latino USA, which is, again, why I think our audience numbers are just kind of really exploding.
Maria Hinojosa, let me get the pronunciation a little closer. I know I'm not a Spanish speaker myself, but Maria is our guest on this week's Eastern Standard, and Maria is our guest on campus this evening for the Eastern Kentucky University Chautauqua Lecture Series, as she is will be providing a Latina perspective on the politics of 2016, delivering a keynote address for Hispanic Heritage Month on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. We're going to take a short break and learn more about the message that Maria Hinojosa is bringing to the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, more about her radio production, Latino USA, more about the PBS TV series, America by the Numbers with Maria Hinojosa, podcasts, and other efforts of Futuro, the organization that is now the producer of Latino USA. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.
Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Recently, our producer, Fernanda Echavarri, told us a story about something she thought was totally normal until she moved to the United States.
I was born in Central Mexico in 1985, and back then it was super popular for parents to shave their babies' heads when they were just a couple months old. The idea was that if the baby, boy or girl, was born without much hair, by shaving their heads, the hair would grow back thicker and there would be more of it. I was a baby with very little hair, and after a few months, not much had come in. I was also my mom's first child, and when she found out I was a girl, she couldn't wait to do my hair, put it in pigtails, braid it, and fill it with bows. So her friends and my grandma kept telling her that she should shave my head so that my hair would grow back thicker.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. A brief clip of the program Latino USA, a public radio production. Maria Hinojosa is the host of Latino USA. You were the original host and have stuck with the program for 25 years.
Yeah, you know, the amazing thing, John, is I started when I was five.
Right. Absolutely. But I am quite curious about, as you talk about the program developing, it's now an hour-long program, and it is still an NPR production, even though your organization, Futuro, is now the producing entity?
It is an NPR-distributed program.
Okay.
And we love NPR for distributing Latino USA. But we are not produced by NPR. So Futuro Media Group, which is an independent nonprofit media company, raises all of the money to make this happen. What it allows us to do is to be independent. I've worked in a lot of different kinds of media companies, from small public radio stations, public TV stations, to CNN, to CBS. There is a particular kind of thing that happens when you are able to be independent. I founded the company because I always felt, honestly, that I had to convince other people, oftentimes other editors, to believe in my journalistic perspective. I was seeing stories all around me, but I'd have to go basically and pitch someone, whoever it was, my boss at CNN, my boss at NPR, my boss at now on PBS. And sometimes they would say things like, I could recall, but I don't really want to, specific, but kind of just like, no, that story is just not important. And I remember thinking like, no, this is an incredibly important story. And of course, 3 years later, it would be on the front page of the New York Times or something like that. And so a part of me really understood that I needed to literally put my money where my mouth was when I was telling young journalists and others to own their own voice and own their own power. I think I just, I pushed myself to believe that I had to become a media executive, had to become an executive producer, had to be the person where the buck stops in terms of our editorial decisions. And had to own the perspectives that I wanted to bring in the journalism that I do. And frankly, in my career, Latino USA has been a part and parcel of my career, but I started my career way before Latino USA. First, I was a production assistant for Scott Simon on his show, Weekend Edition, with Scott Simon. I was one of the founding staff members of that show. And I did multiple other things before I ended up on NPR and before I ended up on Latino USA. And then I ended up, at CNN doing general assignment, breaking news, national coverage, and then doing deep investigative reporting at Now on PBS, where I worked with Bill Moyers and John Sisloff, and may he rest in peace, and also David Brancaccio, who is now on Marketplace. And so I've covered national stories, national politics, investigative stories. And it's interesting that at this point in my career, actually, the thing that is, the basis of my nonprofit media production company is a show called Latino USA. I kind of love it on the one hand because, I feel like we're really doing a service. I think all of our staff members feel like we're doing an incredible service in bringing these stories to light. But the truth is that there are many people and stories that I would love to be doing in the United States of America that have nothing to do with being Latino or Latina, except for the fact that I happen to be Latina and I'm a journalist. And so therefore, it's always going to be a part of whatever story I tell because it's just part of who I am. But I'm also, I'm just a New York kind of girl, Chicago girl, you know, who's luckily been able to travel the 50 states plus two territories, you know, in several countries of the world. So I bring all of that with me in the reporting. But I think this is part of what happens with Latinos and Latinas is that we are really, you know, love to be in touch with kind of our raíces, you know, our roots, what it means, our language, how we deal with each other, the certain things that we may share, which it's very hard to generalize about entire cultures, right? But at the same time, we're 100% American. I mean, my God, this morning I was listening on Spotify to, you know, 1980s hits, you know, Bruce Springsteen, David Bowie, Rolling Stones. That's how I started my early morning after meditating to a Canadian, you know, a woman who does my meditative app, and then listening to the Argentinian singer Mercedes Sosa. You know, all of that in the span of, you know, less than 90 minutes, and then, you know, getting to Harlem.
So not all that much different than the lives of so many of the rest of us who are a little have relatively diverse tastes and interests.
That's what I'm saying. So that's the America that we're actually living in, John. And I feel like part of the media narrative has been that America that's so, gosh, like so incredibly diverse you can't even put your hands on it. It's so unpredictable and amazing, has somehow been sold as something that we should all be afraid of as well.
Well, I'm quite curious about, you talked about the needing to make a split and had established the journalistic independence after working with NPR for so many years. We tend to think of NPR as, of course, a very open and diverse organization, an organization that is open to covering stories and doing them differently than commercial media that we're exposed to here in the U.S. You worked for CNN, you've worked for CBS, as well as the public broadcasting entities. Was there something stifling with working within NPR, or was it just a matter of lack of understanding or lack of perspective that you experienced that caused you to feel that you needed that journalistic independence?
Well, remember when I created Futuro Media, I was actually not an employee of NPR. I haven't been an employee of NPR since 1997, I think, is when I moved to CNN. And my relationship with NPR is through Latino USA, so I wouldn't say that I have felt a kind of editorial stifling from NPR, because they are, you know, we adhere to NPR standards in our production of Latino USA, but we're an independent show, like every other independent acquired show that they have. The other thing that happened, frankly, is that now on PBS, this beautiful gem of a show that was doing deep investigative journalism that was started by Bill Moyers, and then David Brancaccio and I were doing the show, it was cut from the PBS schedule. It lost its funding, and it was a very sad day. And so at that point, you know, I was at a point in my career where, you know, did I really want to go back and have, you know, I had done so much. I had won Emmys. I had won several awards. And I just thought, you know, do I want to go back to kind of doing the daily grind and extraordinary travel that a national correspondent has to do? And I would have to be a national correspondent. And, you know, 60 Minutes didn't make an offer.
No.
That, of course, is my dream job, has always been my dream job, continues to be my dream job. You know, will probably always be, you know, something that I look forward to. I am very happy to report that I have reported my first piece for CBS Sunday Morning, and we are just waiting for it to get on the air. There's a long line of stories to get on CBS Sunday Morning, but I have my first piece on the air for that show. So that's exciting. But basically, at that point, if I wasn't going to go work for the premier investigative show, I was like, okay, well, maybe I just need to do this. It's true. I had an amazing opportunity to work with a philanthropist who believed in me and who said, I'm gonna help you launch this. And then we became a nonprofit that is now funded by the Ford Foundation, the MacArthur Foundation, the Marguerite Casey Foundation, the California Endowment, Annie E. Casey, Packard Foundation. We have many foundations who believe that independent journalism produced by a super diverse neighborhood, community-based nonprofit company run by a Latina. I think foundations and frankly individuals and philanthropists believe that our perspective is one of value, and many people love the fact that we do it with, as we say, corazón, and that it's not about right now making money. Although, of course, there's also a very strong market argument to be making more money. But I love the fact that we're a nonprofit and that we do this for mission and in service. And our listeners, I think, feel that. And that's why they love us.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Maria Hinojosa, our guest on this week's program. Maria Hinojosa, a guest on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University this evening as a speaker in the Eastern Kentucky University Chautauqua Lecture Series. The title of her talk, A Latina Perspective on the Politics of 2016, delivering the annual Hispanic Heritage Month keynote address. That's at 7:30 this evening in O'Donnell Hall, the Whitlock Building on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University in Richmond. Maria Hinojosa, when we talk about a program such as Latino USA and the efforts of Futuro Media, what else do you envision within public media in this country? As we talk about the population shifts, the demographic shifts, and the increased numbers of people of diverse backgrounds, including, of course, Spanish-speaking persons and Latin Americans. Is one program produced by NPR enough? To what extent do you envision that programming addressing issues of the Latino community will expand as the population shifts continue?
So remember, we're not produced by NPR.
Correct.
We're produced by Futuro Media, so we're distributed by NPR.
But if you were making those decisions in terms of the kinds of programs that NPR would be producing or distributing, what would you say? What would you advise them to do in terms of moving forward?
Well, the television show that we produce for public television, that Futuro Media produces for public television, is called America by the Numbers. Because we really believe that while we have this really strong connection to storytelling and to humanizing these stories, we also have a very strong connection to data. And so if you look at the data in terms of the demographic groups that are actually growing exponentially in our country, you're really making market-based decisions on reaching these demographic groups that are diverse. Asian Americans are the fastest growing group in our country. I think it's four times the rate of white America. Latinos are right behind that. At Futuro Media, we're a small operation. We're lean and mean. There is an argument to, say, well, you guys should be exploding and growing, but, As somebody who's running the company, it's always a delicate balance between growing too fast and et cetera. But if I had funds, I would be putting a lot of attention into actually thinking actively about how these new demographic groups hear themselves and want to hear themselves. On public radio, for example, and in podcasts. So, for example, our podcast, which is independently produced, called In the Thick, which is a political podcast. If we weren't being invited to the Sunday talk shows, we decided that we were going to create our own, our own Sunday political talk show that releases in the middle of the week, primarily with journalists of color, but not exclusively. But, you know, that kind of reporting is actually, you're seeing growth in terms of people that want to hear that kind of reporting. So it's, you know, you can look at it cold-heartedly and think very cold-heartedly about just numbers. But at the same time, you've got to have heart. And that is something that I think Latino USA, America by the Numbers, you know, In the Thick and Humanizing America has. And if we create anything else that's new, and frankly, we need other voices coming out of Futuro Media, and that's something that we're going to be working on very hard, but they've got to be authentic. And that's the beauty of making great audio content. When it works, it's beautiful, but it takes a lot of work to make it sound the way it does.
Is there a lot of tension in realizing that what you're producing is English language programming? Is there a need? Are there audiences that are unreached because of the programming is being produced in English?
Well, Radio Bilingüe has been producing public radio radio content, audio content in Spanish for many, 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 many years. And they were based in California, and they have now expanded into areas of the Southwest. And so we actually have a public radio system that is Spanish language predominant. And sometimes I'll go on their air, and it's just a joy to be on their air. I think, you know, there are all kinds of arguments for why things should be done in Spanish. Absolutely. It is an audience that's going to be that wants to be served, and increasingly, it's going to want to be served in Spanish that is very kind of authentically based in how we speak. So I don't know. You know, will it be more kind of naturally bilingual? What does that mean? You know, so that's a whole conversation. But you know, everybody's competing with everybody for audiences. And at the same time, there are audiences out there that do want to hear themselves reflected and see themselves reflected. So it's a fascinating moment in the media world, to be honest, because I run a media nonprofit. It can also be crazy-making. It's scary. It's exciting. I've always, you know, I've learned to deal with fear and just pushing through. But the days when I'm having a rough time, you know, and I'll be just like, well, let's see, who else is having a rough day today as a woman in the media? And I'll be like, probably Oprah. You know, I mean, you know, there are hits and there are misses. So, and we need to understand that this is the rock and roll of the media business. But inside, within that world, Futuro Media and Latino USA and America by the Numbers and In the Stick and Humanizing America, I think, we're doing pretty well.
We're going to take another short break. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Maria Hinojosa, our guest on this week's program, and we will be right back.
Up next, Austin, Texas. The American consumer market is changing.
Latinos today are growing at a rate of 4 times the national average.
Diversity is just good business.
But has the advertising industry changed with it?
The traditional agency from the Mad Men TV series is long gone.
We're not gonna go all mariachi band, okay?
I'm still seeing these white models in advertisements, and that's not who I am.
My objective is to make multicultural be the new mainstream.
This is the new America. Black, brown, Asian, LGBT, immigrants. The country is going through a major demographic shift, and the numbers show it.
The face of the U.S. has changed.
We're American. We care about the same things, but yet we also want to preserve our culture.
I just see it destroying what we had planned to happen here.
By 2043, we will be a majority non-white nation.
We are making, as we speak, a new America, and it's a marvelous moment in American history.
Everybody's voice is important to this debate.
America by the Numbers. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And Maria Hinojosa is our guest on this week's Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. Maria Hinojosa is this year's Hispanic Heritage Month keynote speaker, speaking this evening, Thursday, September 22nd. on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University as part of the Chautauqua Lecture Series. And Marie Hinojosa, what I would like to do right now, if you would, can we talk a bit about your talk as part of the Chautauqua Lecture Series, A Latina Perspective on the Politics of 2016. With everything else going on, Latino issues have arisen and have been very much visible and spoken about during the presidential campaign. So can you give us the 15-minute version of your talk?
Yes, but first I want to tell anyone who wants to watch America by the Numbers that it's streaming now, and you can just go to AmericaByTheNumbers.org. Or PBS.org, and you can find it there, because we just released our one-hour special that is looking at the new deciders. So basically, who could potentially become the new deciders in this presidential race and what it kind of means. And I think that I became a citizen in the late 1980s. and I did that because, and I also think it's important that people realize that becoming a citizen, there are a lot of people who don't become citizens because they have big feelings about, you know, if they can't get dual citizenship, you know, having to return their country of birth's passport. But also, you know, does this country really want me here? And one then having to go through the moment of saying, well, even if some people say they don't want me, this is my country. I am a part of this. And I think that that kind of motivates me in terms of my reporting and what I talk about and what I will be speaking about. I feel like the work that I do is really part of my civic duty. When I became an American citizen and I raised my right hand and I made an oath and promised that, you know, I had to. People who are born American citizens never have to do this, but I raised my hand and I said and I pledged and made an oath that I would serve my country if need be, taking up arms to protect it, even though that may not be my natural inclination, but I had to do that. So I take my civic duty really seriously. But yet, you know, so much of my experience, at least when I was younger and then, you know, as a budding journalist, has been sort of like as the outsider, right? And certainly as a journalist also, a kind of, you're Mexican-born. You know, you're a short person. I've heard you're a feminist. And you're from New York and Harlem. Can we really trust you as a journalist? And kind of always having to prove, you know, like, no, I'm really, please understand that I follow in the tradition of great American journalists like Frederick Douglass and Edward R. Murrow and, you know, Molly Ivins and, you know, so many. Like, I am a journalist who has those ethics. And what I hope is that we can all understand that what makes our country great is that each one of us can bring who we are into the conversation with total love and respect for each other.
But there seems to be a tremendous tension in this political environment this year.
Yes.
With journalists, journalists who pride. And I consider myself a journalist, pride ourselves on being objective and not taking a position. But journalists are finding themselves having to do fact-checking live during a broadcast of speeches by presidential candidates. We're finding themselves having to challenge candidates, raising questions about the veracity of what is being said. And I think there's a generally, and I'm wondering, do you feel this? Do you feel a discomfort going there rather than merely reporting the who, what, when, where of what's going on, having to step into the content a little bit more and engage with the issues being raised?
Well, the thing is, John, is that I realized, you know, I think when I created Futuro Media, I kind of understood that Again, while I am a journalist and you put me into a story and I'm going to follow the basic journalistic ethics that we all have, which means, you know, you really try to put yourself in different perspectives, different people's shoes. You are really sensitive to everybody's. You are, when you are with that person, you are with that person in their understanding who they are in everything that they bring. And I completely am a journalist like that 100%. But on the other hand, John, I have come to understand that because of my particular trajectory in the world of media, being the first Latina hired at NPR, being the first Latina hired at CNN, you know, that people do see me as having a particular role. And so I see that role in basically trying to give voice to voiceless and trying to, you know, bring this kind of unique perspective that I have. It is a particular moment in history. And you are right. We are, everything is changing in the media world. And some of us as journalists are being thrust in it. But at the same time, for example, why we created In the Fake is because we say, okay, well, we believe it's important, actually, for us to speak to a national audience, kind of owning very deliberately who we are as journalists who are, you know, like in my case, I'm a Mexican immigrant New Yorker, you know, married to a Dominican Afro-Caribbean man. So that's who I am. I think it makes us better journalists.
How do you objectively cover a political campaign when there are opinions expressed by the Republican candidate, Mr. Trump, to be straightforward about it, of walling off the United States and Mexico border, or in threats that those who are undocumented and you know, illegally in the U.S. will be perhaps rounded up and sent back to Mexico? I mean, does that create a problem with objectivity and reporting, or does it cause, you know, call into question your mm-hmm. objectivity as a journalist when you report on those issues?
Well, first of all, we would love to get an interview with Donald Trump, and he has said no. We have made the request, and we have said no. So, you know, yes, I would love to interview him. I think it would be important. I mean, I covered him at different, I think I covered him a couple of times when I was at CNN, but I've never met him. But yes, I would love to do an interview with him and with Secretary Hillary Clinton, who has also not agreed as of yet to an interview as of the day that we're doing this recording. On Latino USA and on In the Thick, and even in Humanizing America, we have covered people who are Trump supporters. They are part of our country. So we need to understand their perspective. So that's how we cover it. We bring their voices into our coverage. You know, we also point out in terms of our political coverage, I think our independence allows us to be much more critical of, for example, you know, the recent, you know, kind of all this hoopla around Donald Trump and his potential pivot and quote-unquote softening and all of these terms and all of the media attention around his, you know, going to change on immigration, and that ultimately he didn't change anything. And yet much of the media, I would say the mainstream media in its entirety and much of, you know, digital media went along with that story where we were saying, what is all this hype about? And why are we allowing that campaign to determine what the hype is about? So that allows us to be particularly objective. I think when you have a dynamic of, for example, the presidential debates, and you have no Latino or Latina journalists asking questions, I think our country suffers as a result of that. So we, you know, you have to trust, you know, and this, and you're right, there's a whole conversation about trusting journalists. And hey, you know, why I was absolutely saying that Donald Trump was going to be the nominee when many of my colleagues were saying it wouldn't happen, you know, way before when he was, a new candidate. We were calling Donald Trump, I was calling him on his particular speech, which among Latinos was being called hate speech. You know, so we have been doing this for a long time. That perspective, to not have it in the presidential debates, our country loses as a result. And the assumption that Latinos or Latinas who are, you know, who are award-winning national journalists in our country cannot be objective because we are Latinos. It's just like, you know, to take it to the extreme, that's like saying, well, Walter Cronkite could never really be objective about reporting about the war in Vietnam because he's an older white man and the men he was reporting on dying were young white men. Hmm. So these are our stories that, again, we as a country get better when we understand the complexity and how we benefit from acknowledging the diversity of the country, who we are. It's not going to go away. The data shows it. Our country, places like Kentucky, the entire state, not just eastern or central, the entire state, will become more diverse. And these stories will be central to who we are. Again, do we approach that America with fear? Or do we approach that America saying, hey, we want to learn more because we're kind of living it and we get it, but at the same time, there are things we don't get. And boy, there are conversations and questions we'd love to have. And boy, do we need to have them. And wow, wouldn't it be great to have more journalism being done on that as opposed to journalism that really showcases stories about division and difference.
Maria Hinojosa, our guest on this week's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. A few minutes remaining in this week's program. Maria Hinojosa, by the way, is Hispanic Heritage Month keynote address speaker on Thursday evening, this evening at 7:30 in O'Donnell Hall of the Whitlock Building on the Eastern Kentucky University campus. Maria, the host of Latino USA, executive producer and anchor of that program, as well as anchor and executive producer for America by the Numbers. Maria, in the final minutes of our program, let's return to your talk, A Latino Perspective on the Politics of 2016. What will those in attendance at the talk learn or hear about your perspective on the presidential campaign in 2016 that they may not have heard elsewhere or from anyone else?
A lot of my speech will be informed by what I'm actually reporting and seeing. You know, there is a dynamic which I call the U.S. Mambo. Three steps forward. And I used to say three steps forward, two steps back. Given the political narrative right now that many Latinos and Latinas and many other people, not just Latinos and Latinas, see as frankly very anti-Latino, very specifically anti-Latino, the U.S. Mambo, you could now say it's three steps forward and 64 steps back. So it's a very mixed message for Latinos and Latinas right now. On the one hand, you know, we're kind of, as you heard in that clip from America by the Numbers, you know, we are the target consumer group. Latino women are the target consumer group because we outpace white and black women in terms of being the deciders in our homes as to what products are being bought, what television shows are being watched, what books are being read, et cetera, et cetera. So we have this great, you know, consumer kind of attraction, but at the same time, this is a story that we report on Latino USA, but most media does not. Latina adolescents, teenagers, have the highest rate of attempted suicide in our country and have had it for decades. So on the one hand, we have stories about, Latinos outpacing white students at the rate to which they go from high school to college. It's a beautiful thing. But the fastest growing group of people being detained and put behind bars of any sort, one of the fastest, is Latinos. And Latinos and Latinas are being put behind bars not just in prison or in jail, but then in immigrant detention centers, which are now still allowed to have contracts with the Department of Homeland Security and private prison companies that our tax dollars are paying to make money off of keeping an immigrant body in a cell to bring a profit to somebody who is part of the private prison industry. You know, Sofia Vergara is the highest paid actress on television. And yet, you have another dynamic, which is where many young Latinas don't feel like they are visible or recognized or seen. It's a complex moment for us as Latinos. I also think that, you know, part of the lecture will involve the fact that, you know, if Latinos and Latinas, young people in general, and these new deciders really own their power really basically look at this U.S. mambo in his face and say, yeah, both things are happening at the same time, but we have no choice but to make this into a crazy, amazing, optimistic opportunity full of potential, glass half full moment. If we do that, then, you know, all of these people with these perspectives become the new deciders of our country. And that's fascinating. At the same time, John, I really, really, really want to make it clear that as someone who has been a part of change, I have brought change to this country. I have experienced change myself. You know, the thing that changed me the most as a human being was 9/11, which just passed the 15th anniversary. And that was the story that marked my life. And that has nothing to do with me as being a Latina Mexican immigrant from Chicago. You know, and I understood fear. And I developed PTSD, and so I understand, you know, the fear and a fear of change and feeling destabilized. So for people who look at this America, this new America, with fear, I want them to understand that I want to hear their voices and that I have total compassion. And if I can communicate all of that in a speech that involves politics and demographics and hardcore kind of numbers and rough and tumble, but end up somehow saying, look, it's about compassion, and we need compassion in our country. And ultimately, at our political conventions, you know, there was no violence there. That's because I think ultimately we do, in fact, have the best hopes for our country. And that's what I hold on to every single day as a journalist in 2016.
Maria Hinojosa.
To be Latina.
Maria Hinojosa will provide a Latina perspective on the politics of 2016, the Eastern Kentucky University annual Hispanic Heritage Month keynote address this evening at 7:30 on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. Maria Hinojosa, thank you so much for being with us for this week's Eastern.
It's been my pleasure. I can't wait to be in Kentucky.
Wonderful. We look forward to welcoming you.
Thank you, John.
Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. A podcast of this program will be available for online listening and downloading from WEKU.FM. Our associate producers for Eastern Standard are Marissa Hempel, Grant Willoughby, and Brian Burkhart. Technical director is Brian Bartlett. I'm John Hingsberg, and thank you for tuning in to Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.